This April, the small nonprofit is being sponsored by Troy Mailing. That's T-R-O-I Mailing. Friends, I've personally been using Troy's printing and mailing services for almost 5 years now. I choose them for my clients, and I chose them when I was in-house. They are great to work with, always get my brand colors right, are cost-effective, and get my mailouts to my donors on time, even during busy seasons. Call 1-866-876-4624 for a free $100 postage credit when you use promo code DONORDM1 on your next campaign. Thank you, Troy Mailing, for sponsoring the small nonprofit.
Welcome to the Small Nonprofit Podcast with down-to-earth practical advice on how to get things done in your small organization. You are going to change the world and we can help. Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Cindy Wagman, and I'm joined by my co-host, Anya McGlynn.
Hey, everybody.
So we're starting these podcasts off a little differently now. We're actually going to be sharing with you some of the reviews we're getting on iTunes, really just to say thank you to our listeners for taking the time to review, because it helps other people find the podcast and do their work better. So today's review is by Post Lodge, and they write, "This is a great podcast for anyone in a small nonprofit or who works with small nonprofits. I've worked with a lot of executive directors and been on the board of nonprofits, and this is exactly the kind of thing organizations need. It has really useful and easy to implement tips. Plus, the podcast hosts and guests have great stories. Nice to know my challenges aren't unique and that there are solutions to work for real people." Post Lodge, thank you so much for taking the time to share. We do this podcast for you, and we love the great feedback. So keep it coming. If you listen through iTunes, make sure you subscribe, and then hit review and let us know what you think. Maybe we'll read it on air. So today's episode, we are talking to Ashley, and we're talking about strategic planning. And this is something that there's so many different ways that organizations go about their strategic planning, and a lot of mistakes we make along the way.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guarantee you, whatever way you go about strategic planning, Post-its are involved in some way, shape, or form.
Exactly.
They're the essential tool of strategic planning. So whip out your Post-its after you hear this podcast, because you're going to be inspired to maybe go back to the drawing board.
Exactly. Make sure you have lots of colors. But what I love, what Ashley talks about around Post-its, is that it allows people to contribute and write things down without actually verbalizing it to the room. It can provide some anonymity to giving feedback, which we talk a lot about how to encourage people to participate, understanding that there are lots of different dynamics in organizations and people who are introverted and extroverted and, you know, all those other things. And so much value in this strategic planning process comes from making sure that everyone has a voice in that process.
Absolutely. And, you know, like you said, there are so many different ways to do it, like from a stakeholder perspective, from a mission perspective. I think the key thing is to start really, really broad, to narrow down as you go, and to, like, basically, you know, a lot of the sort of design thinking will say that, you know, you start broad and then go narrow and then actually sort of get broad again. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, this blog really gives a good sense of, you know, how to get that whole team buy-in, how to think about, like, even people who are not in the room, or even, like, sort of what is your strategy for increasing your stakeholder group. And just really practical advice.
Exactly. So grab your Post-its and a pen, mm-hmm. and really listen. And then, of course, bookmark this, because you want to be doing your strategic planning on a regular basis. And, you know, traditionally, we've been doing these 3 to 5 years. But more and more, as we see agility be such an important part of nonprofit success, or anyone's success, the planning process is shortening And so you're going to want to be able to engage in processes like these on a semi-regular basis for your organization. So bookmark this, make sure you come back to it when you are going through your planning process, but the insights you can start to implement right away. Here you go. Ashley is a senior manager at BDO with specialized experience in management consulting with public, nonprofit, and private sector clients. She specializes in strategic planning and program development, as well as a host of other things. Please join me in welcoming Ashley.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me. I really appreciate this.
It's such a pleasure, and I'm really excited to be talking to you about strategic planning because it's such an important part of organizations' growth and operations, but I think it's often, we often overlook that importance. So let's start with a little bit about like why strategic planning and what does that do for an organization?
Absolutely. And strategic planning, I know that we all think about it in terms of the fact that there's this strategic plan as the end outcome or deliverable. But really what strategic planning should be is an opportunity to get together, an opportunity to collaborate, make sure you understand where everybody's coming from, and to be able to collaboratively come to a common idea of what that future looks like. Mm-hmm. So I think the process is as important, if not more important, than the actual deliverable out of that strategic planning.
Yeah, I just spoke with an organization. She said before they did that planning process, you could ask anyone on the team about what the organization did and they would all have a different answer.
That is common. Yeah.
And like, there's one thing about like putting it in your own words, but I think it was quite a diversity in terms of like actually understanding how that mission came to life. So the planning process really helped get them internally on the same page, which as you said, is really important.
It's a great opportunity to take a pause and to try and refocus and to, just like what you said, that other organization did is kind of, you know, talk to people about what they thought the vision was or they thought the core purpose was. And when it is different, it's a fantastic opportunity to really explore why. Why did you think it was different? Maybe we are on the same page. Maybe we're not on the same page. But mm-hmm. it's good.
Yeah. Excellent. And if there is that difference, like which direction do you pick, right? Which is really, I think, an interesting question because there's not necessarily a right answer, which is the whole purpose of this exercise, right? It's to look at all the different options and really focus in on who you are as an organization. So a lot of organizations, A, don't feel like they have time for this. And B, if they do have time-ish, they kind of do a little like or just like side of the desk. Yeah, let's kind of go through this process without really taking the time and space to do it properly. What are some of the mistakes that you see small organizations in particular make in this process?
Yeah, I recognize that it's super difficult to find the time to be able to carve out a half a day or a day even for some of these smaller organizations because they were so operationally intense and it's hard to think, you know, kind of come out of your day job to be strategic. Mm-hmm. So some of the things that, you know, are super important is, you know, what is the cost of doing things wrong? What is the cost of people not rowing in the same direction? That's actually pretty big too. So if you can think about it in terms of the fact that, you know, if we are all able to come together, get a common understanding of where we're going and how we're going to get there, mm-hmm. then you know that your entire organization is actually rowing in the exact same direction, all together at the same pace. Mm-hmm. You will find some other efficiencies in operations. So doing this strategic planning and carving out the time is super important to make sure that when you do go back to your day job, that you're actually all working in the same kind of direction.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit more? So there's a direction piece. What else is at risk if you don't have a solid plan?
The biggest thing that's at risk is the fact that you're applying resources to things that may not even matter to the direction. And so a lot of small organizations, you know, they have a vision and they have a mission. You know, much of the organization either one doesn't understand the mission or the vision
And they just use that as, hey, there's some words on the top of an annual report that I see once a year. And then they go into their department and they just start doing their things. They're, you know, maybe they're frontline services or maybe they're operations and admin. So when they're not able to identify that the activities that they're doing are not lining up to either the mission that they have as an organization, sometimes services are either not presented in a high quality way, or there's and I'm not going to say misuse of resources, but not effective use of the scarce resources you have.
Mm-hmm. And that's so important in organizations that have such limited resources, right? That's the whole point of what we're doing with small charities, is that you don't have a lot of time. You can't afford to be spending it on things that are not adding the most value to your work. So it really is important to have a clear sense of what you're doing, and to make the investment, whether it's time or financial or both, to undergo this process. So yeah. Can you talk to us a little bit about what a strategic planning process can look like? You know, how long would it take? What kind of resources do organizations need to put aside to do this right?
Yeah, and I would like to think about it in terms of like three different types of phases. So you're thinking about before the actual process, what do you have to do to prepare? What are the types of things you can do to prepare? Then the actual event, whatever that looks like, 2 hours, 4 hours, 2 days. And then what happens after the event? Mm-hmm. Like what? How is the follow-up? How do you know that people have actually not just shown up for some cookies and some laughs and then go back to their day job and do exactly what they did before? So yeah, it's super. So, you know, I like to say that from a before is really important, because it can be for these small charities that don't have a whole lot of time, the before can make it such that you can distribute some of the collection of information in ways that are very easy for you to manage. Mm-hmm. So for instance, you might kind of put out an email to folks and say, tell me, your top 10 strengths or top 3 strengths you think this organization has right now. And it might be something that, people are more than happy to kind of share with everybody. Mm-hmm. It might be that you put out a targeted email to each one of the people in your organization. Say, I'm really interested in what you think the biggest challenges that you have facing today. Mm-hmm. Or you can even spend 15 minutes and talk to individuals. But you can kind of span that over a couple of weeks prior to an actual event. And I find that super good if you're able to do it, whoever is going to lead the facilitation. I mean, oftentimes it's, certainly somebody in the management or executive levels, to allow people to really be honest. And so it's important to be able to allow them to speak and have no kind of bias on what they're saying is correct or not correct, even though I know that it's difficult from a management point of view. It's like, hey, we do that all the time. Yeah. And you've got, a staff member saying, no, I never get support doing this. So it's really important to just listen. It's super important just to write down what they've said, listen, because anything they say, there's a reason for it. And, it might be a communication thing in the end, or it might be, hey, they just didn't know. But it's really important to make sure they feel safe in sharing how they think the organization's health is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you mentioned a couple, I'm going to call them data points, in terms of like, what do people think you're doing well? What are, areas of opportunities? What other questions should we be asking in this phase?
I think that's what's really fun to ask, because I think this is something that when you come to a strategic planning session, it really builds the foundation of what the conversation should be on that day. And that is really, why do you think the story of this organization started? You know, what is it that we thought we were doing? Why did we come to exist? And that's really your mission. It's kind of your legacy. What do you want to either one leave behind, or what is it that, why did your story start? And your vision, oftentimes people kind of see that as a target in the future, but it's it's far enough in the future that it's probably outside of some of these people's careers. However, it's achievable. So it's a good stretch goal, but it's discreet. Like you understand what you should understand when you've achieved it. Kind of like we're putting a man on the moon. We totally get it. There was a guy with some boots and he was standing there. Yeah. So you should know that you've achieved it when you achieve it. And so that's super important to have those types of conversations so that you can say, okay, for us to do this, what are the core priorities that we have in front of us? Mm-hmm. And what are the big barriers that we see right now of not being able to do those priorities? I find too often conversations start at the last priorities in the strategic plan or outcomes or objectives. And then they just try and fix them. But we don't have the conversation of like, do we even need to do these ones? Like maybe the best thing to do right now is to do, you know, something different mm-hmm. or something more focused.
Yeah. Yeah. Before we go into the middle phase, I also want to talk, I want to hear from you a little bit more about how to create that safe space. Because I think you referenced it earlier, but it's actually a lot harder than it sounds. So how do you create a process or an environment during this process where people feel like they can actually speak up without repercussion, without feeling foolish? I mean, there's so many reasons why people don't participate. How
Absolutely.
Do we create the space for them to do it?
Yeah, there's a few tools that I use that are completely transferable to inside an organization type tool setting. Mm-hmm. You know, if you are somebody that is a very welcoming and perceived as being non-judgmental, you can have the conversation one-on-one. Mm-hmm. If there's any perception that there's a us and them in the organization, you can either elect to have somebody that is able to be perceived as being non-judgmental or non-influential. So, you know, they might be somebody, you know, oftentimes it might be the, you know, if there's a receptionist or somebody that's welcoming of both the frontline and the kind of more management office side of things, somebody who's in between. And again, you arm them with a couple of questions and you arm them with the kind of, hey, I'm here to just collect information. Nothing that you say will be used verbatim in the session. I will be consolidating this information in a way that there's no way in the world that anybody would be able to identify who said what. Mm-hmm. And through that, what I find is when I have these types of conversations, a little bit easier for me because I'm from the outside, so I am objective. And it's amazing what people will tell me. So if they tell me these types of things, it means they want to talk, but they haven't talked. You know, they haven't had that safe place. And then the last kind of way that if you feel like, okay, I don't want to give it, I don't want my receptionist to know the dirty details of my organization in that same way, is to really suggest, hey, we're going to have an open, you know, comment box around strengths, some of the weaknesses, such that, you know, nobody's identified as being the person that wrote it. Mm-hmm. And then have somebody go through it and you'll start to see some themes come out. Yep. So, you know, I really welcome that in terms of doing it beforehand. Mm-hmm. I also really use that in a facilitation where you have introverted people that really don't want to go and put their hand up against, you know, management and say, well, I don't think that's happening.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I'm a fan of sticky notes. This is my most favorite thing. The best tool in the universe is yes. the sticky note.
Tell us more about that. I mean, I feel like that's taking us into the phase two. So let's talk about how we can manage that process, including in a way where people feel like they can participate comfortably.
Yeah. And so, you know, certainly look at when you're looking at the actual event, look at what is the configuration of the room. Because honestly, a table will be a barrier to people doing stuff if the room is such that it's expected that everybody focus up to the front and then they're supposed to sit close to the table with people mm-hmm. next to them. So it's being just really aware of how are people going to interact if they're in this setting that you've established for them. Mm-hmm. If they are at a table, if, you know, for instance, when I've facilitated at places where, you know, it's just, that's just the way it is, then I really encourage people to have, and I give everybody a pad of sticky notes. I typically like to use something larger, like a 4x6 pad of sticky notes, horizontal. I give everybody a fatter pen, mm-hmm. A thicker pen, so that, you know, when they write stuff, you can see it from a distance. And then I typically try and give them all the same color and all the same color sticky notes, so that, again, we can't identify after, you know, people's writing, but, you know, for the most part, people don't get, I've never seen anybody notice that part of it. Mm-hmm. And so I'll ask a question and I'll just say, put down your first answer. And then I just go pick them all up and then ask another question and I, you know, pick them all up. And so by the time I come back to reflect on what people answered, there's no way of identifying who said what. And it's quite obvious that after a couple of times of doing this, introverted people will become much more open and they will actually say what they're thinking. So, yeah. So, and you can do this first as a non-organizational question or as a positive. Like, so start with, hey, write down a value that you really appreciate at this organization. So mm-hmm. make it easy for people to see, because what you're doing is you're demonstrating that this way of communicating and collaborating will be safe and it will be objective. And then when you're asking the harder questions later, they already feel safe.
Stop the podcast just for a second. I just wanted to take a second to remind our listeners who may not know that this podcast is brought to you by The Good Partnership and Charity Village. So a lot of people don't know that both of our organizations are deeply committed to making sure that there are tons of great resources available to small nonprofits in our sector. And so I want you to take a minute to go and access some of those great free resources. For The Good Partnership, you can visit thegoodpartnership.com and specifically on our homepage, or visit thegoodpartnership.com/guide. You can download a free resource that outlines all different kinds of fundraising strategies you might want to consider for your organization. And for charityvillage.com, there's so many webinars and, of course, the podcast, articles. The list is endless. And, of course, you can post jobs there. Volunteer positions, posting is free. So make sure that you are checking out both websites to deepen your learning and continue to access great free stuff.
Great tips, Cindy. Now on with the podcast.
So what are those questions that we should be asking in this period when everyone is together? Where do you start? And then so what are some lighter questions where you can build trust, build that sense of participation? And then what are some of the harder questions we need to be asking of our teams?
Yeah, and I think the easy questions, you know, they're always going to be around things that are positive and, you know, what are the strengths that either the organization has, or what is also easy for, you know, from the frontline perspective is to say, what are some of the things that our clients or customers are saying about us? Because what they're saying about us, what's top of mind of saying about us, could be really reflective of who we really are as an organization. Mm-hmm. And you can use that to just do a little bit of a validation against who you think you are, or who you thought you were as an organization, you know, like the mission. Another type of easy kind of in that I always go into is really explaining out, just like what you said right in the beginning of this podcast, who are we as an organization? What do we do here? And it's amazing. That one has different answers. You think that you know, you have the exact same answer. But it's important to say, you know, why do you think our story started? And to ask those types of easy questions where there should be no wrong answer. Mm-hmm. And then you can start to get into, okay, what does that really mean for us?
Yeah.
And then you ask, like, what are the hard questions? Mm-hmm. You know, certainly the hard questions are all going to be around, you know, what are our biggest weaknesses? And really ask why that is a weakness. You know, so why do you think we have that weakness? Why do we have that challenge? And to really test people above and beyond, we don't have enough resources or we don't have money. Mm-hmm. Because there's other innovative ways to get to the same result. and we can't default back on, if we had more money, we'd be successful here. You don't have more money, so now what do you do?
Yeah. I could also see there being a little bit, and specifically around that question, a little bit of opportunity for people to place blame. Mm-hmm. So how can we frame people's answers, or how can we give them the tools to be able to articulate some of the issues that they're having without actually like finger pointing and making it really uncomfortable or tense for people?
Yeah. And I think that, you know, always frame the questions around the organization. Mm-hmm. And say that, you know, certainly going back to the beginning of this session, you're going to start off with validating your values. Are those your values? What does it mean to behave in such a way that is in alignment with those values? So I like to set people up so that their behaviors and their ways of communicating within the group are set up for success. So they come out from their job to realize they're there for a bigger gain. And then from there, your questions should be really surrounding the organization. Or another way that typically is a good way to reposition people is role-playing as the client. So if you were a client and you're looking back on this organization, how would you see us? What are the things that we do exceptionally well? What are the things that, you know, you see as being you're not satisfying what my expectations are. So any way to shift the conversation away from departments and delivery to organizational outcomes. So, and the outcomes are how have I been benefited, if I'm a client, for instance, mm-hmm. how have I been benefited from your service or your organization? Have I achieved what I expected to achieve through this interaction with that organization?
Yeah. Excellent.
Yeah.
And now I feel like, I mean, obviously there's a lot in there that gets unpacked for every organization, but I feel like the real magic starts to happen in the third phase where, you know, you start to look for trends and understand what all the information that you've gathered in those first two phases, what it all means and how does it impact your organization. Tell us a little bit about taking that step back and what we can, how we should go about looking at it as a whole.
Yeah. And I think that when you're doing all this kind of open uncovery, you can think about it in terms of expanding our scope, expanding our kind of ability to be creative and be innovative. And then in that third phase, you're going to want to narrow your scopes because, hey, it would be all great if we had all the money in the universe. We would love to be able to do these types of things. Now you have to say, okay, we have this amount. We have these resources. We have this kind of capacity to deliver. And so in the narrowing of your scope, you're starting to now prioritize. You know, certainly we all understand that, you know, if you had 100 top things on your list, you're probably not even going to get like 1% of everything done. However, if you had just the 3 or 4 big priorities, you can really focus in and really uncover, okay, what's it going to take to do those 4 things well? Mm-hmm. So prioritization is a super important thing to have in the strategic plans and your strategic planning. Also, because the activity around prioritizing, and even if that's done at your strategic planning session, the activity around prioritizing also trains or educates people around always questioning, if we did this thing, would we achieve our vision? What am I doing to achieve our vision? And it's constantly coming back to that question. If we did this well, would I achieve the vision? If I did something else, would I achieve it faster or better or with better quality? So really coming back to that question and then narrowing your scope to the 4 things that you can do exceptionally well.
So what are some of the mistakes that people make in that, like consistently in that process, that you can help them avoid?
Yeah, I think some of the top mistakes that I've seen is, in no particular order for sure, but here's I have a few that I see quite often, plans that are carved in stone. So, you know, oftentimes people, like, they'll fill out a template and they have these plans and they drill down to some level of detail that is probably inappropriate from a strategic perspective. Mm-hmm. And then people attach themselves to a deliverable as opposed to an outcome. Mm-hmm. So that just means that instead of really understanding what is the end outcome that we're trying to achieve for, let's say, you know, a funder or a client, we're actually now going to, hey, we said we'd put on this event and we would copy 10,000 posters. You know, so we want to make sure that we're always looking at if there's a need to shift, we should be able to shift and we should be able to quickly identify when we shift. Mm-hmm. So plans carved in stone, not doing your due diligence before doing the strategic planning session. Mm-hmm. A lot of organizations, again, coming back to the beginning of this podcast, I think they don't have any time. You know, it's probably something that they're going to do off the side of their desk. But it's really important to reestablish your understanding of who you are in the market, which is an objective thing. So it's, you know, it's doing that kind of external scan. Who are the other organizations that are serving the same clients? Are they in alignment with us? Are they, you know, in competition for funding with us? You know, all of that is really important to come to the session with some level of understanding, refreshed understanding of what the environment looks like for you. Mm-hmm. A couple of other things are around partial commitment. And this happens quite often where individuals are, that sounds like a good idea, but it wasn't my idea. So I'll just say yes, but really I'm going to go back to work and do my same thing. Or I'm going to continue doing the thing that I thought was the best thing. So, you know, we all understand if we're not going in the same direction, we can't get there. We just won't ever get there, or it'll cost us so much more. So, you know, it really, people need to understand that, you know, we're here together. We have the same focus, same desires to achieve some level of quality and success. Let's all get together and let's do this. Some of the other things I find are unrealistic. Mm-hmm. So you will see these strategic plans. They have this like fantastic vision. And then they say, here's our priorities underneath. We're going to achieve greatness for all. And then nothing happens because it was completely unrealistic based on either one, who they were as an organization, or their resources to be able to achieve it, or they didn't do an environmental scan to be able to see if they should even be paying attention to those types of priorities. Mm-hmm. So it's important to kind of validate, like, is this realistic? Do we even need to do this? And if we did need to do it, do we have the resources, capacity, utilization to be able to do it?
Obviously, a lot of organizations don't have the resources to outsource this. Mm-hmm. But if they did, I mean, I'd love for you to talk a little bit about why you think that's important, because I do think it is. But also, like, how do you find the right person to lead this process for you?
Yeah, I think that, so it doesn't have to, number one, I would have to say, is it doesn't have to be expensive. Mm-hmm. Because when we look at the three broad brushstroke phases that we've been talking about, the organization can really handle all the back end. So they can handle all the information notes, the document delivery, all that kind of stuff can happen at the back end within the organization. And in fact, a better place for it, because it reestablishes and confirms for folks, this is what I'm doing to achieve the vision. Mm-hmm. I would also say that being a objective person, you know, things are a whole lot faster. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that pre-phase can happen very quickly by interviewing people on the telephone. It doesn't take anybody's time out of their day. So oftentimes you can do that very quickly with each person for, you know, 20 minutes. And then what the outside facilitator would do is to be able to figure out, okay, what are the big themes we need to talk about, or what are some of the big challenges we need to solve? Mm-hmm. And then for the actual day, you know, it's a, you know, that facilitator will come prepared. That facilitator will be able to figure out if they're if what tools are being used are appropriate for that organization, and they should be able to shift quite easily. So I think the big thing, coming back to your second part of the question of, well, how would you choose the right facilitator for that? Mm-hmm. I think number one, just be honest. Say, hey, we only have $4,000. What can you do? Mm-hmm. Like, as opposed to making them quote.
Yeah.
just be honest and say, hey, we've only got $2,000, whatever it is. Like, just be honest and just say what it is, because they could have other reasons why they'd want to help you. So it may not only be on how much is their time worth. Mm-hmm. The other thing would be, make sure you feel comfortable, that you have a good rapport, you feel like they, for you, are somebody that you would tell your life story to. Because it's important that they share that kind of openness with the rest of the group that would be there at that session. Mm-hmm. So it's important that they, you know, I would say more than the practical tools, that they are somebody that is open and honest and non-judgmental, objective. And then secondary, I would test their skill at actually understanding how to facilitate towards a strategic plan. And there's a lot of different approaches. You know, anybody can Google how to do a strategic plan. But what's important is, you know, can they shift when they realize that somebody's dominating a conversation? Do they know how to uncover, you know, when somebody is protecting an issue? You know, do they know how to nicely explore into it and say, well, why don't we talk about that a little bit more? What does that look like when that happens? You know, so it's very much that coaching method of saying, you know, what is that, if that went wrong, what would it look like? You know, and so it's a lot of that really open-ended types of questions. And that's really important for in a session, because you're going to get people that are going to just dominate. Mm-hmm. And they're going to pretend like, or maybe they believe it, that what they say is actually fact. And honestly, you know, we all know that half of what we say is probably fact and the rest is complete fiction. But you can get to some place that's really good if you uncover it. And so, you know, number one, I'd say make sure that you have a good rapport with them. Number two, just tell them how much that you have for a budget. Number three, make sure that they are experienced to be able to navigate different personalities in a room. Mm-hmm.
We've kind of covered a lot. I just want to make sure before we share all the resources with everyone, if there's anything else you think we should be aware of as organizations seek to undertake this process.
I think that, again, you know, if we recap, I think the most important thing, I actually do think one of the most important things is around the process, mm-hmm. and it's including people. Sometimes I'm asked by executive directors, you know, who should I include in my strategic planning session? And my answer is always going to be everybody.
Yeah.
As appropriate. So I do add the as appropriate in brackets, just from the perspective of, you have a very large organization, you obviously cannot take everybody in, but give them the opportunity to participate in one way, shape, or form. The process is a learning opportunity. It's an opportunity to get to know each other better. So I think that is also not something to diminish in terms of the value. It's an opportunity for, you know, different folks to hear how other people rationalize or think. And we all think and we do things differently. And so the more we have that understanding, the better. Mm-hmm. And then I think that it's important to make sure that you actually understand what you think you're going to come out with at the end of the day. And then the end of the day is, you know, whatever that deliverable looks like. Is it something like, you know, a lot of organizations are doing these days are a plan on a page, basically. Like, mm-hmm. so what does that look like? And to show people, this is what we want to achieve today, is a plan on the page. And, or is it going to be a long, you know, strategic plan that's 25 pages? So make sure you establish what it is that you're going to achieve. And then the last thing that I think is super duper important is, we have no idea if we're going to achieve our vision unless we make sure we ask ourselves, what are the performance measures that tell us we're moving in the right directions?
Yes. And tracking those.
And tracking the right things. So, yeah. I mean, I have a lot of fun doing these strategic planning workshops, like training sessions for folks. And I love the fact that, you know, it's like, if you want to achieve success on something, you can't be tracking the outputs. And outputs are those things that are like, we photocopied 10,000 copies of a poster, or we emailed 1,000, you know, new funders to ask if they might be interested in coming to an event, or anything that looks and feels like after you finished it, you don't necessarily have to repeat it, but you have no kind of evidence that what you did is going to achieve the outcome you're looking for. Mm-hmm. So we want to make sure that your performance measures, your things that you're counting, the things that you're managing and monitoring are around the actual outcome. So outcomes are things that, you know, kind of achieve some version of benefit or success for a target, you know, audience, you know, so it might be a client, it might be a funder, it might be government, it might be, you know, the organization, and to start to monitor those. So you want to be able to have a vector that people understand, and vectors are those things that are, you know, increase something, decrease something. You want to be able to start something brand new, or you want to eliminate it, or you want to maintain it. So mm-hmm. there's basically everything of your performance management should include those five, one of those five vectors. And it shouldn't be something super squishy. And I love the squishy words, but you know what? Honestly, it can't be like, we're going to enhance our customer service, or we're, you know, we're going to harvest efficiencies in this particular area. Like, nothing that there could be a difference of opinion of what direction we're going.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, thank you again for your time. Where can people learn more about you and the work that BDO is doing in this space?
Absolutely. BDO, on our BDO website, there is one of those kind of top things to consider for strategic planning. There's a PDF there for folks. I've also, you know, there's webinars out there. There's one that BDO, myself, I hosted for strategic planning for nonprofits mm-hmm. through Charity Village.
Yep.
I also really, really like Jim Collins. And he was the guy that did the Good to Great and How the Mighty Will Fall. He has some tools that he's posted online. So you can actually, you know, look at a PDF and see if there's anything there for you that excites you to ask different questions during your strategic planning session.
Excellent. Well, thank you again. And thanks to everyone for listening. We'll see you next time.
Great. Thank you.
Well, folks, that's it for today's episode of The Small Nonprofit. I'm your host, Cindy Wagman, and this show is brought to you by The Good Partnership. As a reminder, if you want more resources around raising more money for your small nonprofit, visit thegoodpartnership.com and download our free fundraising strategy guide. I'll see you next week.